You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are again. Welcome back to TPC this Saturday evening, May the 22nd. And as we did last week during the first hour, we are taking you back to the mid-1950s with music to fully complement the commentary and to help you settle into that frame of mind. Yes, indeed, this is part two of two as Keith Alexander continues to explore America's precipitous decline and why that Black Monday on May 17th, 1954, when the Brown versus Board of Education decision was handed down by the Supreme Court, marked the beginning of that decline. So I'm your host, James Edwards, and we did promise you 2 hours on that particular topic, but we wanted to spread it out 1 hour one week, 1 hour the next. And so here we are, and here we go. What do we have in store for you tonight above and beyond that, you ask? Well, we've got a good one lined up. This evening, Brad Griffin, the editor-in-chief of Occidental Dissent, is going to return to the program to discuss encouraging post-Trump trends within the Republican base. And then, in the third hour, Lauren Witzke is back on the show, the firebrand former Republican nominee for the United States Senate out of Delaware. She won the GOP primary in 2020, lost against an entrenched incumbent in the general, but she's going to close tonight's show with further examination of the future of the GOP and the ongoing Arizona election audit. So, Brad Griffin, Lauren Witzke on deck tonight. I'm James. He's Keith. Here we go. I had supper with Keith and our good friend Eddie the Bombardier Miller a couple of days ago. And I said, Keith, we can do this second hour on Brown, but we can't cover any of the ground that we covered last week. And by the way, last week's show did get we always get a lot of feedback and a lot of correspondence, but there was an uptick in last week's positive correspondence. Keith did a really good job on that, and the audience wanted him to know that, and we got letters hither, tither and yon from the South, where we're based, all the way over to the UK and beyond. So, Keith, what didn't we cover last week that you feel as though we need to cover tonight? Take it away, my friend, and let me tell you one more thing, folks, before we go to Keith. Listener Mark in Missouri has sent us a wonderful clip. Keith and I were listening to it here in the studio just a few minutes before we went on the air tonight. That's really going to accentuate this wrap-up on Brown. Go, Keith.
What we didn't cover, I don't think, was the big picture of how Brown has changed life for the worse in not only America, but in the entire West, in the Europe and the Anglosphere. It has basically opened Pandora's box and let loose the dogs of war, as Shakespeare said, or had one of his actors saying in his Julius Caesar play. This is what has happened. Basically, it was a great betrayal of the American people by the Supreme Court, by the federal judiciary. Why was it a big betrayal? It was a betrayal because they used the power of the court and disregarded the law and used that power to improperly and invalidly and without justification to step in and change the law. a law that was not just any old law. It was a law that affected the lives and well-being and peace of mind and financial stability of a large segment of the American people. I'll explain all of that to you, hopefully, in the rest of this exposition. What it did was it left white people with no option except to send their children to private schools. There were not enough private schools to handle them, so they set up schools basically in a place like Memphis in every white church's Christian education building. Their Sunday school classes became Monday through Friday classrooms for a little so-called segregation academy or private school alternative to the public schools. This costs money. This disturbed the financial stability of the white race in America. Think of the trillions of dollars that have been spent by white parents trying to find adequate alternative education to the previously adequate public education they got for free, but they could not use because they did not want to send their children into a veritable snake pit, which is what most urban and many rural public school systems have become since Brown.
Well, Keith, if I could just jump in for one moment, since you made mention of the sacrifices that parents had to make to send children to those types of schools. I was one of those kids, along with my younger brother, my only sibling. There was one thing you were wrong about last week, maybe the only thing you've ever been wrong about in your life, to my knowledge, and that was why we left that particular school. You had said it was because my dad lost his job as a coach. That actually wasn't what happened. The reason we were able to go to that school was my dad worked two jobs. He was the captain of the fire department in our city. And he also ran his own construction business. My mom worked at that school. My dad coached at that school. You know, you did get a little discount for doing that, but they certainly didn't give you a free ride. The tuition at that school was $10,000 at the time. That was in the mid-90s. And then I, of course, spent the last couple of years of my life homeschooling, or the last couple of years of my high school education homeschooling. Now the tuition at that particular school is over $20,000 a year, more expensive than state colleges. But in any event, one more thing about sports, though. I did make mention of this, and if, whenever we're on this topic, I like to make mention of the fact.
No, you like to brag.
This is like Al Bundy. Al Bundy talking about his Polk High School football career.
I remember when Al Bundy said, "I've served my country. I played high school football."
So I was on the team. Dad was on the team. And after we made the decision to leave to go to homeschooling, that's when he decided to quit coaching there because he didn't want to coach a team that I wasn't on. We went 43-0 that last year, the only undefeated team in the history of the school up until that point, to my knowledge, still today. But one thing I wanted to mention about that, we won the state championship. I don't even know if they would allow this anymore. 43 games is a lot for a grade school team, and we practiced 3 or 4 days a week in addition to that. But we would play the inner-city Memphis schools, and we would play these all-black teams. And those were the teams that we would pummel far more heavily than the teams in our private Christian school league, or as you call it, segregation academy. So anyway, the point of me interjecting that was to say this. That is the sacrifice that parents had to make. A father working two jobs, a mother working one, just so you could get out of the public school system. And that is a legacy of Brown that we will continue to explore with Keith Alexander, the great, for the remainder of this hour. Then two great guests. It's all coming your way. We're just getting started. Stay tuned. Hold on to your seats.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth.
Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Thrills I get when you hold me close. Oh, my darling, you're the most. I love you, but do you love me? Oh, Diana, can't you see? I love you with all my heart, and I hope we will never part. Oh, please stay with me, Diana.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the way America sounded in the mid-1950s. That's Paul Anka with Diana, the biggest song in the world, and I believe it was 1957. So just a couple of years after the fall there with Brown and in 1954, but close enough for our purposes tonight. What a great song. That song, Paul Anka wrote that song, so the story goes, when he was 14, and it was a song about his unrequited love for his sister's babysitter, who was a couple of years older. I have a feeling that Diana probably wished that she would have accepted his gestures, seeing the way his career.
Well, today it would be his unrequited love for his sister, probably, or some other guy.
Well, not with Paul, maybe with some of these new age songwriters. But in any event, the wholesomeness of the 1950s, we talked about this last week, of course, just the innocence of America, what was left of it after the war and Reconstruction and just all of that. But, hey, that America's long gone, and we're talking about one of the watershed moments in its dissolution. So, Keith, take it away. You got a whole segment uninterrupted. Go, my friend.
Let me just reply to your comments about your particular experience. Well, what was clear throughout that whole presentation is that in the minds of your parents, money to pay for education was a factor. I don't know if they left the Briarcrest school system because they thought that they were being taught bad things. I thought that really came on later, but it could have come on that early. I don't know. But basically, before Brown, nobody worried about where they went to school. I went to a very, you know, socially prominent type of Episcopal church. We just wound up there by accident when my father, who was on the vestry of another working class Episcopal church, was on the wrong side of one of these disputes about the pulpit, who was going to be the preacher. So we wound up going to the nearest one, which was this society church. And in that society church, I got to know a lot of high society Memphis Country Club type people that otherwise I wouldn't have gotten to know. And I can tell you this, I knew some people there that were multimillionaires, people that were involved in, for example, the first major waste management company in America. That family had five boys. And this man, this family could have sent them all to Eton if they'd wanted to, but before the real consequences of Brown hit, he sent two out of three of his sons who came of age in the 60s to the local public school right across the street from Chickasaw Gardens, East High School. Now, they were like George Washington, first in love, first in war, and first in the hearts of their countrymen. They were quarterback of the football team, pitcher on the baseball team, president of the senior class. They had one son who had, you know, some health issues and also wasn't quite up to par with the rest of them. The father sent that son to get whipped into shape at the local, Catholic order school, Christian Brothers High School. But after busing hit in the early 70s, the two that came of age in the 70s, he sent right to MUS, which was the best boys public private school in Memphis. That's the type of decisions that were forced on people. But before, look at the housing days, a multimillionaire didn't think twice about sending his kids to public school. That's the type of freedom, that's the type of educational system that we need in America to really live up to our ideals of being a nation where people have equal opportunities and the wealthy and the not so wealthy mingle together. All that was destroyed by Brown, and I think it was destroyed on purpose. See, Brown was the essential key to the cultural Marxist takeover of the West. Not how. America was the citadel of the West. Take it, and the rest falls. What was the event that caused the prosperous West to fall? World War II. Germany was prospering. They were the one nation, advanced nation, that had totally gotten out of the Depression before World War II started. World War II destroyed their economy and basically destroyed the economy of other European nations, including, ironically enough, Britain, which was the primary mover that wanted World War II to go on. And it wasn't the British people. It was a particular warmongering maniac named Winston Churchill. Okay? Now, that's exactly what happened, and because of that, America wound up being at the top of the world because we really didn't suffer, as Paul Craig Roberts pointed out recently in an article called I've Outlived My Country from World War II. We lost probably about 400,000 men in the military, but we got out of the depression we had been in, and we came out the top dog economically in the world. In fact, the American dollar replaced the English pound as the reserve currency for the world. Well, we were on a roll until Brown versus Board of Education came and basically knocked the props out from under American prosperity.
Well, so we had this 250-year American experiment. Well, not quite 250 if you stop it in the 1950s. You could call it a little less than a 200-year experiment. Maybe you could call it 250. You go back to the 1600s. But even if you start the count, start the clock at 1776, 1777, you got a good little run there until you get to 1954, where America had that buffer of the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. So we didn't have any armies to fight on our soil. You certainly didn't have much of a threat out of either Canada or Mexico in those years. But hey, if another nation couldn't defeat us, we would commit suicide. And so we did.
Well, what happened? How did we get into World Wars I and II? Basically, Jewish power and influence drew us into both wars. World War I, we were drawn in by Jewish power and influence because Britain wanted us to join the war on their side. And they knew that if we didn't join them, they couldn't get a resounding victory on the Western Front. They would basically just have to call a truce. They didn't want that. What did Jewish power and influence get in return? They got the Balfour Declaration, which allowed Jews to move to Palestine freely with an idea of eventually creating a Jewish state there, which they have done. Now, then in World War II, we got drawn in again because of Hitler had made the unfortunate mistake of, in the eyes of Jewish power and influence, of saying that the Jews needed to move out of Germany. Well, that's what, you know, that cannot go unpunished, and it was not unpunished. You ever wonder why we had the Nuremberg trials in Europe, but no equivalent in Japan, even though the Japanese are much crueler to our prisoners? The reason is, Jewish power and influence had no bone to pick with the Japanese, but they did with the Germans. And basically, like I said before, Robert Jackson, who was on the U.S. Supreme Court and was one of the anti-integrationist voices on the Supreme Court at the time, in fact, probably the chief one, was the chief prosecutor for the Allies in the Nuremberg trials. Now, everything else fell into place after Brown. Brown provided a blueprint for every left-wing movement. If you can't, it showed the left how they could win and change the law without winning elections or persuading legislators or persuading the population. What happened was people said, well, you know, the Supreme Court is a venerable institution. If they find something wrong with segregation, well, there must be something wrong with it. Well, as these tapes we're about to show you exhibit for you will show you, nobody, including black people, really wanted racial integration in the schools and other places. We're going to go all in on this after these words from our sponsors.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
During a press briefing at the White House, President Biden gave out good news about the coronavirus vaccine.
We think that over the remainder of 2021, we're going to be able to vaccinate every American. We have enough vaccine to vaccinate every American, period, right now. And we're going to be able to do that by midsummer, and we're going to continue to get more people to engage in seeking the vaccine. I don't believe, or never have believed, that there's a large percentage of Americans who will not take the vaccine.
The Tokyo Olympics will open in July, even if the city and parts of Japan are under a coronavirus emergency. The International Olympics executive that made the declaration said the World Health Organization is assuring everyone it will be safe. This is USA Radio News.
If cancel culture and censorship continue at their current pace, there will be nothing left of the truth. The Epoch Times was founded to keep truth alive. We ask the questions we think you'd ask. We check facts without regard to any political agenda. No one tells us what to cover or how to cover it. We have a special trial subscription offer right now. 1 month of the Epoch Times and total access to our amazing online content for just $1. You'll find it at TrustedNewspaper.com. 1 month, $1. TrustedNewspaper.com.
You've heard me talking about MyPillow for 3 years. Folks, it's the truth. I get the best sleep of my life with a MyPillow. You can do it too. 60-day money-back guarantee, 10-year warranty, made in the USA. You'll sleep well or you'll get your money back. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, use my promo code USA, get 2 MyPillow premium pillows for the price of one, or call 1-800-951-8175. Get the best sleep of your life and do it now.
The U.S. Military Academy at West Point is elevating about 1,000 cadets to join what's known as the Long Gray Line. They will now be Army second lieutenants. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin delivered the commencement address.
You've learned how to follow with loyalty. You've learned how to lead with honor. You've learned how to question with rigor.
Austin himself is a graduate of West Point 47 years ago. Humanitarian supplies are now arriving in Gaza after 11 days of combat finally ended with a ceasefire. President Biden was asked about a shifting stance on Israel.
There is no shift in my commitment, the commitment to the security of Israel, period. No shift, not at all. But I tell you what there is a shift in. The shift is that We still need a two-state solution. It is the only answer.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
I hear the cottonwoods whispering above. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love. The old hooty owl, hooty hoos to the dove. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love.
If you come and visit us in Memphis and you ever make it to the home of Keith Alexander, there is one thing you will do above anything else, before a bathroom break, before a drink of water, before anything. He's going to put on Tammy and the Bachelor.
Well, that's not quite true, but it is one of my favorite movies. And you were mentioning that Paul Anka had the number one song. It may have been that in sales, but as far as being at the top of the charts, I think his song, Diana, was there for 7 weeks. But Debbie Reynolds' version of Tammy from Tammy and the Bachelor, the theme song, was there for 10 weeks at number one.
All right. And as you said, you wanted to play it because it shows the world we left behind. Yes, yes, yes. Well,
exactly.
Let me play one more clip very quickly here. This is actually something that we promised a listener in Missouri we'd play. Very interesting. So it's been 67 years since Brown. So what's going on in colleges and in institutions of learning today? Let's take a quick listen, and then we're going to go to a very surprised caller. He's a mainstay guest, but he's calling in tonight unexpectedly, and we can't wait to get to him and hear his thoughts on this. He's going to add to the discussion. But first, take a listen to what's going on 67 years after Brown.
Columbia University is planning to hold 6 separate graduation ceremonies this spring. A Native graduation, an Asian graduation, a Latin graduation, a Black graduation, a low-income graduation, and a Lavender graduation for the LGBTIAQ+ community. The school has one big graduation also that's open for everybody, but I'd never heard of this before, had you? So Waters World looked into this and discovered college campuses in America have become deeply segregated. Did you know that hundreds of universities hold segregated graduation ceremonies? I didn't. Yale has a Black graduation. Georgetown has an Asian graduation. Harvard, Arizona State, Stanford, UCLA, many others. Segregation isn't mandatory, but it's what many minority students want, apparently. And it's encouraged by the institutions. Why? The National Association of Scholars has deemed this phenomenon neo-segregation. It began after the Supreme Court's 1954 landmark ruling Brown v. Board of Education, followed by the Civil Rights Movement a decade later, both aiming to achieve racial integration at schools and throughout the country. Initially, racial integration in higher education didn't go well for a number of reasons that we don't have time for tonight, but the NAS says what ensued helped spark, to some extent, the Black nationalist movement, which espoused Black separation on campus.
All right, let's pause it right there for the sake of brevity. So basically, that's a Fox News clip, by the way, just
Waters.
You know, few days ago.
Jesse Waters in it?
Well, who knows? But in any event, basically what he's saying is what you were saying before, Keith, and that is that Brown wasn't done to help other people. Other people didn't want it really much more than we did. It was done to hurt us. And let's go to Sam Dixon now, who's been waiting patiently, a surprise caller tonight, but always a welcomed guest on this program. Sam, you were listening to the conversation and wanted to add to it. What do you got?
Well, let me put out something for you and Keith and the listeners to think about. I think it's a very important lesson over and above the total failure of Brown. I would add, Keith may have mentioned this, and I've been listening, I've been interrupted listening, but you know that there's no scientific study that has ever shown that mixing the races ever achieved any significant improvement in Black academic performance. So we have pursued this utopian project for 3 generations without any data, without any scientific support at all. And the media never raised this question because, as Keith said, the purpose of it is really to hurt us. That was why it was hatched. But the one thing we can do as I've said over and over again, is we can't control what our enemies do. And we can't control what the government that our enemies have at their disposal does. But we can control things within our own power. And one of the great failures of the private school movement after Brown versus Topeka Board of Education was that basically the only thing the schools offered to white children, the private schools that were set up to some extent under the auspices of the Citizens Council of Mississippi, it was this: you could send your son and daughter to those schools, and you could be relatively assured that they would be safe. Your son would not be knifed, your daughter would not be raped. And I guess you would also say that they got something of an education, probably not a whole lot better than what they got in the public school. But the extraordinary thing was that parents, as James said, were paying $10,000 of after-tax money per kid to put them in these schools where the children were taught exactly the same thing that the system was teaching in the public schools. They used the same textbooks, the same left-wing biased textbooks that told them about the glories of Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt, the wonderful war in World War I to make the world safe for democracy, the kindness and goodness of that sterling Christian character named Abraham Lincoln. They were told that, that all the races are equal, everybody is the same. Science has proven that the races are equal. Biology doesn't matter. 100,000 years or more of separate evolution doesn't matter. Everybody's equal. All the pablum, all of the destructive lies that were taught in the public school were taught to the children in the private schools. There were people that tried to get these schools to adopt different curriculums with different textbooks and maybe have the courses in racial science or a course in genuine American history. They were booted out of the Citizens Council. The white Southerners were determined, apparently, to go on having their kids taught the same nonsense that they were learning in the public schools. The only difference being is there were no actual other races around to teach the children that it doesn't work. And we're now hearing all across America the idea of secession. And I think polls show that something like 40 or 50% of the people who identify as Republicans say that they're seriously considering secession. And we hear people, friends of ours, all the time, I know y'all do, I hear it, that they're going to move to the country or move to Idaho or Western North Carolina or West Virginia because they want to move into an area that looks like them and get away from multicultural experiment. My guess is that unless people focus on and realize the mistake that was made in these private schools, they will go to these areas where there will be these overwhelmingly white areas like West Virginia and Idaho, and everybody will revert to the same nonsense that got us into this trouble to begin with. So we need to think about that. Think of what could have happened in America had millions of Southerners gone to schools, high schools, where genuine history was taught, exposing the scoundrels like Roosevelt and his wife, telling the truth about the McCarthy era, telling the truth about the biological basis of race and the fact that no race, no individual has ever been equal. Where would we be today if we had millions of Americans who had been properly schooled in reality instead of being reared in Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm fantasies? What do you guys think?
I think you're right, Sam, and it was a lost opportunity. On the other hand, on behalf of the people running the so-called segregation academies, and they weren't just white citizen councils. I mean, these were springing up like mushrooms in Memphis, and we didn't have a big white citizens council presence here at the time. But people were flat-footed. It was hard to find teachers. It was, you know, there was not an alternative source of textbooks unless, you know, they could have gone back to some older textbooks, I suppose. But basically, what they did is they did what they wanted to do. They totally disrupted the lives of white families and put a tremendous financial burden on white families that had not been there before. And that was their intention. And what those clips that we were running before Sam came on, and by the way, Sam, thank you so much for your insights. They're always solid gold as usual. This is the situation that we, confront. Black people didn't want racial integration either. Who wanted it? Jewish power and influence wanted it because it was the best way to disrupt the lives and the domestic tranquility of white people in America. That's the sum and substance of why they did it. When I was going to school in the 60s in the South, we had something, a kind of halfway house between racial segregation and full integration in busing called freedom of choice, where if a person wanted their child to go to a school in which they were a racial minority, a white to a black school or black to a white school, they'd go so far as to hire a cab every day to take them back and forth. But that wasn't enough for the social engineers. As Rousseau once said, sometimes people need to be forced to be free.
Hold on right there, Keith and Sam, two intellectual heavyweights. Sam, if you don't mind, stick with us through the break. We got one more segment on this topic. We'd love for you to be part of it. We'll be right back, everybody. Don't go anywhere.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing Foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various Foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Love is a many splendid thing. It's the April rose that only grows in the early spring. Love is nature's way of giving. Reason to be living, the golden crown that makes a man a king.
I've talked to Sam Dixon about this, certainly off the air, probably on it as well. And what a nice surprise to have Sam join us tonight for the this discussion, because it adds such another layer of talent and depth. But yes, I realize we can't go back to the 1950s. If you push rewind on the movie still ends the same way. But comparatively speaking, it had to have been. I don't know. I wasn't there. Keith, you and Sam were. It had to have been much better than this nadir that we are racing towards here. But I want to make mention of something, or rather respond to something that Sam brought up before. And that was these private Christian schools using the same curriculum that the public schools were. The only difference was the racial component. That was mostly the difference. I can tell you from having grown up in private Christian schools in the 80s and into the early to mid 90s. It certainly was a little different, I think. I can remember, I mean, not different at all anymore. A lot has changed since 95 when I went into homeschooling, and God's hand was on all of that. I mean, this was the path my life was supposed to take. I mean, that's what was supposed to happen. I loved the formative years going to this school. It was an all-white school. It was. That's just a matter of fact. Homeschooling, if it was not for homeschooling, I wouldn't have entered into activism, and this was where my life was supposed to take me. But I do remember, though, Sam, we would, at this school, every morning in grade school, we would pledge allegiance to the flag, pledge allegiance to the Christian flag, and then pledge allegiance to the Bible, and then we would sing Dixie. We would actually sing Dixie at a school, even in the late 80s and early 90s. But as one of our listeners in Nashville writes, the curricula was no different because the schools needed to be accredited by the same liberal school accrediting associations. No accreditation, no college admission. And with that, my friend, I toss it back to you. You can pick up on that thought or take it anywhere else you'd like.
Well, I think that's your guest, your supporter who contacted you about the accreditation committee is right. But they would have had a harder time saying, well, we're going to... yank the accreditation because they're not teaching the right message about McCarthy, or they're not teaching the right message about Lincoln. That was a harder nut for them to crack. And what is the point? I mean, if you allow your child to be, you allow your child's head to be full and filled with this nonsense, you're sending him out like a lamb to the slaughter. You're not doing your job as a parent if you allow your child to be propagandized with all of this stuff about how everybody's equal, America's always on the right side, Americans are always the good guys, we never have done anything wrong, Lincoln was wonderful, this sort of stuff. It's really a form of child abuse. And and ultimately, as we keep fleeing the public schools to the private schools, fleeing the cities to the suburbs, fleeing Atlanta for Forsyth County up north of Atlanta, fleeing here, fleeing there. Eventually, we're going to run out of a place to run to. And if you don't tell the truth, if you don't teach the truth to your children, all of this is pointless. You're just postponing the destruction of your children and your race and your civilization and religion. That's all you're doing.
I want to toss it back to Keith to respond to that, and then back to you for a final word, Sam. And it's like Professor Drew Fraser of Australia said, certainly now, not quite as much then as it is now when I was there, but these Christian schools today, and certainly the churches themselves, are like tuning into MSNBC at prayer, or attending a Communist Party meeting with a prayer included. I mean, it is exactly as you say now, certainly in 2021. It's been a long time since I was at a private Christian school, Keith.
Well, Sam is right, of course, but let me just add this to it, that now we've gone into a next phase in which conscientious parents are doing homeschooling. Now, the hard truth about this is that not all parents are prepared to be teachers, and even fewer parents are prepared to teach at a high level in STEM courses, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. You have to get supplementation on that, and they're using the fact that you went to a home school as a way to keep you out of selective colleges and universities. This is a problem. I can see white people becoming the new Amish, people that have to live a totally alternative life and not be part of the larger American governmental and economic system. And, of course, that's exactly where our enemies want us to be. They want us to be powerless. They want us to not have a voice. They want us to be considered a bunch of mugwumps or dimwits or whatnot that cannot, handle or are not on a par with these others. Of course, I think it's probably very good. The left has overplayed its hand. I'm glad that they won this last election rather than having Trump in there again, because now people can see just how pernicious their program is in some ways, and also they can get, on the other hand, regarding the Israeli-Palestinian problem, a different perspective is being, a different line is being towed by the administration, the American administration, and it's causing people to think and discuss things more. But again, every left-wing movement that we had since Brown, since public school integration, has used the blueprint of Brown. If you can't get what you want in the legislature or the executive, go to the Supreme Court and you can get it. And, of course, it doesn't work both ways. It's just like Charlottesville and January the 6th versus Selma and Birmingham. We can't protest peacefully and expect the same type of results. We likewise can't go to the Supreme Court and expect fairness in the application of the law and principles. Brown was the first time they basically departed from law, stare decisis, case law, and legislative history for the Constitution or statutory interpretation, and put in some crazy sociology experiment by a bogus black sociologist named Kenneth Clark, who even dishonestly portrayed his own experiments. It's just like James having a defamation case that was absolutely right on target. They said the textbook example of somebody being defamed was to be called a member of the Klan when they weren't. That's what happened to James. But what they did was they didn't base it on stare decisis. They didn't base it on legislative history. They based it on Aesop's fable. Basically, our judiciary has been taken over by people that use the power of the judiciary but to make up the law.
Go ahead.
You and I are both lawyers, Keith, and we work in the system of just us. And so anyone that thinks that as a white American he can go to a court, local or federal, and get justice is sadly out of touch with reality. One point, though,
certainly out of date.
We might ought to consider living as the Amish. I don't agree with you that our enemies want us segregated off like the Amish. I think they want us caught up in all of the continuing saga of America as the nation dedicated to the idea that everybody's equal. Where we're headed in terms of secession and things like that, we need to be thinking post-America. America is gone. America is an experiment. The experiment has failed. Our people have to find a different nation, a different way to survive.
Let me say this.
Very, very quickly, Keith. Because we're running out of time.
I think Sam and I are both wrong. They don't want us to be the Amish, and they also don't. They just keep us around to torment. They really want us dead. They want us to be extinct.
I think you're absolutely wrong. This Korean woman that they put on the editorial board of the New York Times says she looks forward to the day when the last white person's dead, and the non-Korean people of the New York Times who belong to another ethnic group, they defended her and said that this opinion was understandable in the fact that she was an Asian woman that grew up around dirty, white, racist Christian America. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that the editorial board of the New York Times wants us all dead.
Sam, I want to tell you again what a great treat it was to hear from you tonight without you being booked. Now, of course, you're a mainstay guest. You're a regular. You've been appearing on this show for as long as we've been on the air, 16 and a half years now. But you really added to the discussion tonight, and I'm so glad you called in. One more comment germane to this discussion coming in from a listener in East Tennessee. The Amish are on to something. Going to colleges is overrated and dangerous anyway. Send your kids to trade school if they're boys. Teach them to be stay-at-home moms if they're girls. So many people have lost their children to these indoctrination centers. Sam, last word to you. It's a two-week miniseries on Brown. 1 minute to go before we go to Brad Griffin and Lauren Witzke, the former Republican nominee for U.S. Senate out of Delaware. 60 seconds, Sam, take it away.
Well, I think there's one thing Keith and I should say to your listeners as lawyers, and that is an aspect of Brown versus Topeka Board of Education that gets very little attention is the layer after layer of professional misconduct that probably would result in disbarment. The fact that the lawyers, Thurgood Marshall, for the NAACP and the plaintiffs, were able to meet with Frankfurter on the court and the Justice Department. There was all this ex parte communication, the use of perjured testimony in the form of the Dahl's test by Kenneth Clark, the use of an expert witness, Gunnar Myrdal, whose wife is a spy for Stalin against socialist Sweden. There's just layer after layer.